Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Oh, no, wailed 15-year-old Susie, standing at the door of her room. We can't move again. I just finished my first year in pep club, and Carly and I are going to try out for varsity soccer next season. Dad, how could you do this to me? I'm sorry, sweetie, sighed her father, Major Dunlap. But you know the Army. When you gotta go, you gotta go. Oh, but why us? Susie flopped down on her bed, head in her hands. Everyone else I know has a dad who goes to work in the morning and comes home at night and doesn't get transferred every 2 years, especially not out of the country.
I know, but...
I have an idea, Susie sat bolt upright. Why don't I stay with Carly? Just till I finish high school, wouldn't that be okay? Then you and Mom and Dale and Johnny could go together and...
Susie, her dad interrupted, how do you think the family would be without you?
Then in a softer voice, there's a good possibility that this time I'll be deployed into a hot zone. Oh, no, Dad!
Susie was back on the bed, face buried into her pillow.
Oh, no!
What is life like these days for military families? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. We're fortunate to have experts with us today to give us a picture of what life is really like for military families. Dr. Doris Durand is a military sociologist with the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research, studying the effects of deployment on soldiers and their family members. Her husband is a retired Army officer, and she has four daughters, two of whom are in the military. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Durand.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Colonel Carl Castro is a psychologist who is chief of the Soldier and Family Readiness Program at the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research, looking at the impact of deployment on soldiers and their families. Colonel Castro has three children. Thank you for being with us, Colonel Castro.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Captain Lolita Burrell is a research psychologist, also with Walter Reed Army Institute of Research, working with Dr. Durand and Colonel Castro. She grew up as a Navy military brat. We're so glad you could join us today, Captain Burrell.
Thank you. I'm glad I could be here.
In terms of separation from loved ones, what makes military families different from the rest of us?
I think the time that the husband or the wife is away from the children, they can be gone 6 months or longer. And when they are gone, if they are deployed to a hot zone, they have the risk of injury or death. Businessmen can travel. They can be away from home. It is usually for a shorter period of time, and we don't normally think of their lives being in jeopardy when they leave and say goodbye.
How young are children when they're aware of this in military families? Can they be aware of this as young as, like, preschool?
If you have a very young child, say 4 or 5 months old, and a soldier is deployed for a year, well, when the soldier comes back, the child won't even know who they are. Mm. And so that can be a real reintegration adjustment problem for the soldier coming back from a deployment. If the children are older, they're aware from news, from classroom activities, because the schools do a very nice job of appreciating the sacrifices that soldiers make and, you know, usually send care packages to soldiers who are deployed or letters to soldiers who are deployed, sort of a pen pal relationship. So that's how they really can become aware in the States. Or if they're stationed overseas, they're in a Department of Army military school system or Department of Defense military school system. And, of course, everyone is very aware then of deployments and when soldiers are gone or when deployments are coming up.
What makes military families similar to the rest of us? What kinds of things do military families go through that all the rest of us go through?
Soldiers care about their families. I mean, one of the things you think, oh, well, soldiers must not care about their families as much because they're willing to be away from them. And that's certainly not the case. I mean, soldiers miss their families. They, if they had their choices, they prefer to be with them, not separated from them. And the fact that they've decided to serve their country that often takes them away from their families in no way should it be perceived, oh, well, they're different and they like being gone from their families, because that's not the case. They like being around their family. They like being around their children if they have children, and they like being around their friends. So that's a really important point to really appreciate from a soldier's perspective.
Captain Burrell, did you go through this when you were growing up, this kind of separation?
Yes, well, especially in the Navy, I mean, generally my father was gone on the ship for 6 months at a time. So my mom in many ways was a single parent, and at the time it was just me. It was difficult, but I mean, you learn to be more, I guess, self-sufficient in that regard too, because, you know, he's gone, your mom's got to take care of, you know, the bills and the things at home, the day-to-day functioning, taking care of the household, making sure the car is repaired, because he's not around.
What kinds of supports are there in the military for single parents? Speaking about single parents.
The Army has a variety because they are quite concerned with the single parent who may have to deploy or who even in garrison when they're at the post. She has to be up or he has to be up bright and early in the morning, arrange for daycare, and then off to the job, and many times has to work long hours so is separated from the child. So the Army has the daycare programs. They have after-school activities. If there are problems, they have counseling for the single parent. They have counseling for the children. They make every attempt to respond to the needs of the single parent, I think, and they do a beautiful job of it.
Actually, we're talking about two different kinds of single parenting
right.
here because we're talking about the single parent who's a more long-term single parent and the single parent who's single parent because of deployment, like in Captain Burrell's case.
Right.
What happens, by the way, with people who are single parents, long-term, really single parents, who have to be deployed? What happens to the children?
They have to have a family care plan to make sure that they have someone who's there to be able to take care of their child or their children so that when they do go off to wherever they're deployed to, you know, those issues will be taken care of. So that's what they use in order to make sure that that occurs.
And in fact, the single parents have a tremendous challenge because we talk about deploying and being separated from your family, but the Army also does lots of training that is can be 6, 7, 8 weeks at a time where you're gone. You could be at one of the national training centers, you could be on a training exercise in another country. And single parents also have to have someone who can take care of their child or children during that period. And it's also a period of time where the soldier is gone from the family as well. So part of being in the military is you have these periodic times anyway where you're gone for several weeks or months at a time before a lengthy 6-month, 8-month, 12-month deployment comes up. So it's part of our culture of being gone.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about military families.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Doris Duran, Captain Lolita Burrell, and Colonel Carl Castro about what life is like for military families.
What kinds of changes in family relationships have you seen when one parent is deployed away from the family?
I personally have experienced this. My husband had two tours in Vietnam. Mm. And what happens in my case was that the wife became the husband, the father, the plumber, the electrician, etc. You assume all the roles, the responsibilities, and the duties that come from your husband's having been there. It's very difficult. I know when we moved, I couldn't get my washer to work. And my very kind father-in-law and mother-in-law were there, and they couldn't get it to work. So I called an old Army buddy, and he says, "Oh, don't you remember these wood blocks that are in the washing machine to keep it from moving?" And I said, "Oh, now I remember." But it's the things that you would have your husband do, in my case, that you have to take on yourself. Keeping the car running is a strange undertaking for a lot of women. And I'm talking about the traditional family. But when it's the female that goes and the husband is left. He has to learn how to separate the white clothes from the dark clothes, etc. You know, so they learn new rules.
It's interesting because you're talking about it from the standpoint of the wife and the parent, and Captain Burrell experienced this as the child.
Did you find a difference in your relationship with your dad when he came home, since he was away for such extended periods of time?
I would say yes. I mean, here he's been gone for a while, and so I'm used to having my mom around. We have our routine of what we're doing, and then, you know, he comes in and he's kind of changing that routine. Because usually what would happen is, I mean, even when he was at home, still, you know, he may be late for dinner or whatever, but when he was gone, then we had more stability because then we didn't have to worry about him being late for dinner. We could eat dinner whenever we wanted to. So those are issues, too, that also arise. And then just the whole general reintegration and the roles and responsibilities, you know, does the other parent, you know, keep those responsibilities while the other parent was gone, or do they give them back? It gets very complicated at times.
Do the children take on different responsibilities when one parent leaves?
For me personally, I don't think I took on any different responsibility than when he was around. I mean, I helped around the house, did my usual chores, and hoped to get a dollar for it, you know, that sort of thing. But I don't think I wound up doing more. I know in some cases, yes, you know, the child, and maybe if it were, you know, an older male that was around the family might have to assume more roles. In my case, I didn't.
Some people think the separation is the difficult part, and the separation is difficult, but the reunion is just as difficult and sometimes more difficult because one spouse is at home. He or she has been the disciplinarian. He or she has been in charge of the checkbook. And when the soldier returns, what duties are left for him or her to perform? So they have to compromise and work out a whole new family relationship at reunion time. And that's not easy to do.
Yeah, and in fact, we did a study in Europe with senior army leaders. And one of the things that they will tell you, every single one, and this is from senior colonels to general officers, is that without a supporting spouse, they would not have been successful in what they do. And when describing, well, what is it spouses do that makes you successful? They said, everything that's not related to my job is what they do.
Wow.
So they take care of everything. And so it's sort of this expectation, and I can, speaking for myself, my wife takes care of all the finances, makes really all of the decisions on the day-to-day running of the family. And I've learned, or adapted, however you want to say, to just let her do that. And I don't try to reintegrate and take over things that she's doing perfectly well. Doesn't mean that they're done how I would do them, but she's doing them. She's taking the responsibility. I just let her have that.
So for the sake of continuity.
Oh, yeah. I can't just come in and start trying to take over the checkbook. I mean, it would require a 4 or 5 hour class on exactly what are we doing here. I mean, it's just not worth the effort. And so that's just what I guess me being lazy. But one of the things young spouses especially will tell you when they're left alone to manage this stuff, that they never thought they could do it. And now all of a sudden they can do it. And they really gain in self-confidence and realize, wow, I can really do these things that I didn't think I could do. Because, you know, the spouse had always been there to take care of these things. Say, I can do this. And so they gain self-confidence and a degree of independence.
When you're studying the effects of deployment on families, do you work with the entire families or do you talk only with the parents?
We talk with the soldier and the spouse. And those are the two people that we generally, not generally, exclusively talk to. And we also talk to leaders, you know, because leaders have a sense of how families are doing. We ask them, well, what have you done to prepare families? And they have a program in place to try to keep spouses informed of what's going on during the deployment through the family readiness groups that the Army has. And this is done at the unit level where they try to put out a flyer, a newsletter. They have a phone tree for contacting spouses to let them know how things are going. They have morale and welfare telephone calls where soldiers who are deployed can call home free of charge. It's usually two or three 15-minute phone calls a week. They also try to set up video teleconferences so you can actually see your spouse and your children if you have them on a camera. They try to set that up. So the Army has done a lot of things that to try to keep families connected while they're deployed.
But you're doing research that affects children, but you can't work with the children, is that right?
We don't generally work with children because of the rules and regulations surrounding working with children. So we ask parents, you know, how are children doing? And they're pretty forthcoming. And for children who are in the Department of Defense military schools, we'll talk to guidance counselors and get a sense from them, well, how are children doing? Is it deployment related? How are they adjusting?
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion about military families.
For an audio cassette copy of any Parents Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Doris Durand, Colonel Carl Castro, and Captain Lolita Burrell about what life is like for military families.
What about children who are not in Department of Defense schools? Do they have access to counseling?
Well, they do. They have access to counseling both through the school that they're in, because the government pays school districts additional funds if there are military dependents attending that school. And then also through the Army medical system or any medical system, whether it's Navy, Air Force, there's also access to counseling through that mechanism as well.
In the interactions we've been talking about, do some of the children react differently connected with their age?
The younger children, we're talking toddlers, they miss the dad for a period of time, but time has a different relevance for them. So they kind of accept, after a while, his being gone. But if you take a school-age child or an adolescent, they feel that deficit in their homes and will react differently. It's hard for the kids nowadays, I believe, because they see so much on television. What's on the battlefront is brought home. We noticed that particularly during Operation Desert Storm, Desert Shield. People stay glued to CNN, you know, and this really affected those children in the adolescent period or first grade on.
This is the war with Iraq, the earlier war with Iraq.
Because they could see what was happening, you know, and dad or mom might have been there for them.
What carryover do you see with some of these issues to non-military families? Now we need to involve those of us who are not in the military. How can we civilian families be of help to military families in our communities?
I would think just the general principle, whether you're in a military or civilian community, is to be a good neighbor to each other and to, you know, get to know who your neighbors are and offer whatever assistance. If you see someone's coming in new to the area, let them know that if they need to know how to get somewhere or if they need help with something related to moving in, to do that. I mean, I think being a good neighbor is the best way to be of help in helping out the military family.
Military families prepare for their husbands and wives being gone by having wills ready, power of attorneys, medical power of attorneys, how to live an independent, strong life by yourself. And I think this is a valuable lesson that could be applied to civilian wives or husbands. They need to know, you know, what happens in the event my spouse should die. What should happen were they seriously injured in an automobile accident? Where do I go for medical care? Where's my will? Where's my power of attorney?
So the idea of contingency planning is something we should all be working on, no matter whether we're military or non-military.
Absolutely.
Do you think children should be involved in this a little bit, adolescents?
Well, the children are. For example, if you're a single parent and you have a family care plan, I mean, the children are said, well, you know, when I deploy or if I'm going on a training exercise, you're going to be staying with Aunt Mary or with Grandma while I'm gone. And then that's really where the dialogue begins. They say, well, how long are you going to be gone? And so, well, we don't really know, but this is the plan that you will be staying with this. So they're already thinking and have already had sort of these discussions on where they're going and when they're coming back. So it's not as it's coming out of the blue unprepared. As Dr. Duran said, you know, the preparation is absolutely critical. And it should also be pointed out, too, I think, that soldiers want to go on military deployments. That's why they joined the Army, is to serve their country. If you're an infantry soldier, you join to fight the enemy, not to stay in the United States and just train all the time. So you're prepared to do that. And one thing that sort of gets lost is that a spouse who's willing to sign up with a partner like that is really making, I think, some tremendous sacrifices, because they generally sacrifice career aspirations because they know they're going to be moving a lot. They know that they're going to be taking on tremendous responsibility for maintaining the household because the soldier will be gone. So the military spouse is really sort of the unsung hero, and sort of mentioned earlier, it is a partnership. You know, one is doing one thing, another is doing something else. And without the partnership, it just really couldn't work.
Are there differences in the concerns for families of reservists these days?
What is so unique about the reservists is their lack of familiarity with the active duty Army and its resources. They are basically civilians whose husbands and wives have gone once a month for a weekend and 2 weeks over the summertime.
Like a hobby that all of a sudden became
yes.
a vocation.
And then suddenly their spouses are gone for 9 months to a year. And for them, it's a whole new world.
Are they able to take advantage of the services that military families are given during these periods?
Yes, they are. Once they're on active duty, the family's able to take advantage of those. But as Dr. Duran said, they often don't know what's available. Even the reservists themselves sometimes don't know what resources are available, especially when it comes to the family. So in medical care and the basic things such as shopping at, you know, the post exchange or the PX, as you call it, in the commissary, which is a grocery store. So it's very difficult. And then, of course, they have the economic concerns because here they're leaving their civilian jobs and they may not be making as much money in the reserves as they were in their civilian jobs. And they're not sure, is my job going to be there when I get back? So then that creates an additional burden on the reservist or National Guard family.
Do they have resources to go to answer those kinds of questions?
Well, they would be able to go to, like, the Army Community Service, which is available, again, to the active duty, and go. And they have programs with financial readiness, deployment readiness that can address various issues related to what they need. So
they don't have to go it alone.
There's a great deal of information that is being put out to these spouses. And we hope that each spouse would take that opportunity to learn that. You know, the difficulty being with the National Guard, so many live away from mm-hmm. active duty posts. So they're kind of out there on their own.
What resources would you suggest for listeners who want to learn more about life in a military family?
Well, a really good place to start is the Military Family Resource Center. And they have a website, mfrc.calib.com.
Can you say that one more time? Because I know there are people out there rushing for their pencils.
It's mfrc.calib.com. Mm-hmm. And there's also a phone number, area code 703-696-9053, and also a DSN phone number, which is Defense Switch Network, which is 426-9053. So on post, you can call this number, and it's a local call versus a long-distance call. If you just typed in military families on the internet, I mean, you're going to get a bunch of hits, and you'll be able to really search it systematically. It could be Army families, Navy families. All of the programs are very similar and mirror each other because we try to learn from each other.
Dr. Doris Duran, Captain Lolita Burrell, and Colonel Carl Castro, we thank you all for being with us and helping all of us learn much more about military families and what the rest of us can do in this very difficult time we're going through. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 173. Tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.